Thank you for joining us at the Roundtable.
Brought to you by Community Education Arts, a nonprofit organization based in Noblesville, Indiana.
I'm Alice Cavanaugh Scober, President of CE Arts.
And I'm Sarah E. Morin, Secretary of CE Arts. Let's sit down at the Roundtable. A lot of what you're saying, Alice, really resonates with me. I've always lived in central Indiana my whole life, just kind of hop around where it is. So I don't have the Georgia experience. I would describe a lot of my experience as the very typical white experience of thinking, hey, I am completely free of discrimination or racism. In fact, I might be slightly better than average. Where you're very well intentioned, but you just don't really understand for a long time that no, you actually can be well intentioned and still be racist.
Yeah, that I think that's a big thing, and I don't want to pick on the Midwest, but I was born in New York. We lived in Oregon, Washington, and California before we lived in Georgia, and so I feel like my experiences in those other states, even as a small child, you know, very different parts of the country. And the Midwest and is no worse or no better. It's just there's certain cultural realities here that I think may not be as prevalent in other areas and vice versa. So, you know, it all matters. You know, everything you see and experience matters. And I think what you're saying is very important, that you may not realize as a child especially, you know, you may not realize as a child especially how privileged or how different white America is to black America, for example.
Mm-hmm. So kind of how I grew up, it was with the same messaging of it is bad to be racist, mm-hmm. it is bad to judge people, you know, by the color of their skin. And so I remember, especially in high school, just falling in love with reading about Susan B. Anthony, Sojourner Truth, Frederick Douglass, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, because all of that to me is human equality efforts. And so I remember, you know, writing a musical about those human rights and suffragists, activists, and thinking that, yeah, hey, I must be a little better than average.
Yeah.
But then also coming to hear, you know, a couple decades down the road from that some of the things that I'm sure I thought if I didn't say back then, I'm like, those are problematic things to say. Like, I'm not racist because I have some black friends.
Mm-hmm.
No, that doesn't mean that you don't have some racist attitudes.
Right.
Or things like, I don't see color.
Yeah,
that doesn't help.
Yeah, that's
yeah. You cannot confront and change how people are really being discriminated against if you don't see color. It's not actually a helpful thing to say. And so it really came home to hit me because professionally I work with kids, and I remember thinking that they are not confronting racism and what they're doing volunteer-wise because I don't hear about it.
Mm-hmm.
But then one of them did come to me and say, hey, I would love to maybe lead a workshop or a training for other kids of color like me. She was a person of color, not specifically black, but she was a person of color. But she's like, because of these sorts of questions that I get from the public as I'm volunteering. And I'm like, you get those questions?
Yeah.
She's like, oh yeah, pretty frequently. And just because I, as the white lady, hadn't heard about it, I had assumed that it was not happening.
Yeah.
And so becoming aware of, yeah, these kind of comments are being made, you just may not hear about them. And then also taking a lot of self-reflection time thinking, okay, are some of the attitudes that I have that I think are good attitudes actually good and helpful ones in confronting racism? And you're absolutely right that we as white people have a bad tendency to think, I don't have a color.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
we do
because
have a color.
We're the default, right? We're the default. We're the norm. Everybody else is different. And that right there is a position that we're born into with white. If you're born with white skin, you're born into that position of that is how you see the world, because that's how the white generations before you saw the world. And so that's your, you don't know that's a bad perspective or a not helpful perspective. You know, you just don't. And until you become aware, and then it's like, oh no, you know? And I think language, you mentioned, the words we use, like, I don't see color, I'm colorblind. And, you know, learning that's not really a anti-racist way to say you're not racist, you know, because that's like erasing the color. You know, we don't want to be colorblind. Colorblind means you can't see the color, right? You know, you don't see the accurate color. So we don't want to be colorblind. We want to see the colors of all the phenotypic expressions of the human genotype, and, you know, and support and embrace all of them as equal. You know, we're not supporting them because they're lesser or somehow not us. We're supporting because they're all equal. We all are equal. And so language, every little word starts to matter so much. And you know, again, you and I are not going to be perfect in how we say the things we say when we're talking about racial issues or any kind of prejudicial issues that we find in, for example, our NICE project, which is based on classic literature. We're going to have books that are written in a time period or about a time period that is going to be rife with, shall we say, problematic, you know, issues and language and things. And so how do we discuss those without coming across as, you know, from the white point of view? You know, we have to embrace, we have the white point of view, but we want to broaden it. And you know, I keep thinking of I can't remember now if it was what Greek philosopher it was. I think it was a Greek philosopher who died saying, I'm still learning. Was it a Greek philosopher? I can't remember. Anyway, you know what I mean? But that's how I feel like we're going through this, still learning. We're still learning the words and the phrases and the language to use to better understand and support equality, you know.
Kind of continue on with some of my journey.
Yes,
is I've spent professionally in my other work, my paid work, a lot of time, particularly when we've been all locked down because of COVID-19, taking the time to prepare for if I want to have a more diverse program, if I want to try to represent Black history in a more fair, equitable light, what are the steps that I need to take? And part of that has been a deep dive into what are my own racist views. Mm-hmm. And so a book that I read that I think has a lot of interesting points, I don't agree with it in every point, but has a lot of interesting points, is White Fragility by Robin DiAngelo. And some of the things that I definitely am taking away when she talks about how to discuss racism or discuss these types of difficult issues, I think could apply to what we're doing with NICE. And one of that is to don't let your white voice be so loud that the Black voices cannot be heard, to make sure that we are stepping back at appropriate times to encourage and to make space for Black voices. And I think when you were hitting on the idea of that fine line between empathy, sympathy, and appropriation, I think we're going to run into that in probably some very practical context, that as we discuss racism, making sure that, okay, I'm not just telling Black people what they should feel about certain ones of our books, that we're also letting them have the space to say what they feel. And so here's just my shout out to anybody listening from any walk of life. We would like to hear you, and we will make some space so that your voice may be heard.
Yeah, I think that would be great. Our podcast is something that we like to record with we kind of do these, what we call our behind the scenes recordings, like what we're doing now, you know, between just you and me, we're doing our own discussions, but we also have opportunities for guests to come on and talk with us. And definitely, yes, the invitation is out there to anyone who can hook up to Zoom, you know, and talk with us about these topics, especially as we go into our NICE project. I think that's always something we want, is to get, I mean, because again, our NICE project is based on classic literature, and it's based on choices of four books that you and I make, and then we pick a passage from each book. So we have four passages from four books, and that's the basis for the project. So these are the books that we chose, you know, you and I. So opening that up, that discussion up to other people is part of what we've always done every year with NICE. This year's a little different because so much of what we're doing is done with Zoom via remote recording rather than in-person workshops, for example. So we're going to be having a series of episodes for our podcast that are you and I talking about what we would normally kind of preface a workshop with. We're going to have those discussions and then have the workshop be open to public participation and everything. But within the context of those pre-workshop discussions, maybe we'll get somebody to come in and talk with us too. That would be interesting and fun. We'll have to think about that. we're always evolving, right? We're always trying to evolve the conversation. You've said so many things that really made me think, and I do want to make one thing very clear. I think that you, if my understanding is correct, you were raised in a very religious family and community, correct? Is that okay to say it that way?
Very religious. I don't think I'd say very, but religious, yes.
I don't mean like bad very religious. I mean I mean in the best possible way, because I know you and your family, the best possible. I get myself in trouble. I don't even know it. But I guess my point was that I was not raised with religion as part of my life. My parents were had chosen to not be involved in organized religion as adults. You know, they had both had those experiences as children. My father was Catholic. My mother was raised in Greek Orthodox religion, although she was Macedonian, not Greek, but that's the religion that the Macedonians practice. And I should probably say my mother immigrated to America when she was a year old on the last passenger ship out of Europe for the duration of World War II. So she got out just in time. She was 1 year old. and so their choice to not go to church, to not belong to a religious community like that, you know, impacted me because I didn't have that in my life. So my understanding of religion came from just reading the Bible and reading anything I could get my hands on, including Greek mythology and other mythologies and Jewish texts and in translation. I don't read Hebrew, you know. So I mean, it was not a totally unforeseen thing that I ended up studying anthropology, which part of anthropology is looking at world religion, you know, different, you know, cultural religions across the world. So I didn't have the same kind of experience of having that good Christian upbringing of, you know, everybody's equal, treat everybody with respect, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. I didn't have that in my childhood. I was just told, you know, being racist is wrong, you know, okay, it's wrong, I won't do it, you know. So I feel like that such a strong part of your character is your kindness and your generosity that stems from your faith, I guess, is what I was trying to get to, is that I would think that has also informed on you and how you see the world and how you see the issues that we're talking about today. I think that's probably a very, 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 and I think that's an important thing to talk about, because a lot of people lean on their faith like that for guidance on how to treat their fellow man.
Well, thank you for the compliment, Alice.
I mean it sincerely.
In general, no, I think that when we get into, and this is a little bit of a non sequitur here, but Yeah, I think that, yeah, for both of us, our spiritual practice in whatever shape that took is going to affect how we are going to read and interpret these.
Yeah,
these
I came to my spiritual beliefs and all of that stuff through a more academic journey, if you will, than actual being a part of, participating in, growing up in a certain organized religion community, so to speak, or going to a certain church. I didn't do that, but all that reading and studying brought me to a certain place of spirituality that I feel very confident and firm about, that's good for me and helpful to me and everything. So similar to, I think, how your faith sustains you a lot of the time too. So I feel like we have different journeys, but we kind of got to almost the same place, so, or similar places. And I feel like that is something that connects people worldwide. I think there are a lot of people who may practice different belief systems or whatever, but the fact that they have them, they have belief systems, they have faith, that may help and inform on their perceptions and perspectives of the issues, the more negative issues in the world. And I feel like right now, with the stuff that we're seeing in headlines and everything, faith is very important. For it's hard not to lose faith when you see some of those headlines and things. Mm-hmm. But I think it's also very important to acknowledge that faith can be so helpful and a good thing in these kind of bad times, terrible times. But okay, so.
Right.
This has been At the Roundtable with Alice
and Sarah E.
of Community Education Arts.
Our nonprofit organization is based in Noblesville, Indiana. You can find us online at cearts.org.
This activity made possible in part with support from the Indiana Arts Commission and the National Endowment for the Arts, a federal agency.
We'd like to thank James Weston for writing our intro music and for his technical savvy.
Join us next time
at the Roundtable.